This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode X. Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode X. I shouldn't even say that over again, should I?
It might be 18. If you're hearing this, wonders of nature have been worked, or it's much later than it was recorded.
Or it's a really late Christmas miracle.
Or it's like a DVD extra on our box set.
Right.
What's iFanboy?
iFanboy.com is a website that I, Connor Kilpatrick, Josh Flanagan,
hello,
and the absent Ron Richards, we all run, and we talk about comics, and we love comics, and every week we read our weekly stash of comic books, and one of us picks the best one from that week, and then we write about it on the website, and then we talk about it on this here podcast, which you may or may not be hearing. This week, Josh has the pick, so take it away, Josh.
And I did the pick last week, too, because I'm that kind of guy. This week was a simple, easy pick. I had a good stack of books, a lot of books for me, I think six or seven books, plus some old back issues in there. Was a new Hellblazer, new Avengers, I shouldn't put new in a title because of that, new Loveless, Runaways, Testament from Vertigo, the last book I read was the best book I read. It was Daredevil 82, which was Ed Brubaker and Michael Lark's first entrance into this title. And I believe that I am not alone in saying that I was completely blown away by how good this was.
It was, I don't know if I'd be out of bounds saying it's one of the better single-issue comics I've read in a while.
Yeah, yeah. It was like one of those things where it felt a lot, like, I don't know if it was 22 pages or not, but there was a lot of stuff in there. And I was just like, ooh, there's more pages.
You know, they've stopped numbering pages, and I don't know why, but that's a trend in recent years. So I couldn't tell you, but it feels like a regular size comic, and you're right, though. It was so jam-packed full of action and intrigue that it felt like you read three or four issues.
Yeah, it was good pages with tons and tons of panels on them, but it wasn't, like, overly wordy, I don't think. I mean, he's a talkative guy, but...
No, he's not Bendis in that sense, but he's...
No, it's dense, and in a really good way. So basically, where it is that when we talked about it last time... on Bendis's last issue, Matt Murdock found himself in jail because the government accuses him of being Daredevil, which of course he is, but he can't tell them he is, and that's illegal to be a vigilante, and it was just a hell of a hole to be in. And apparently he had talked to Brubaker beforehand and said, this is kind of where I'm thinking of going, and Brubaker said, who was going to follow him, said, okay, I can work with that, which is one of the braver decisions I can think of, because that's a hell of a place to start in prison.
True.
So you open up this book, and you get this sort of, like, Hell's Kitchen, New York City. It's not a nice place anymore, and it's all dirty and horrible, and people are having crimes perpetrated against them. And then you turn the page, and there's a beautiful two-page spread of Daredevil ostensibly jumping through the darkness and the rain.
Wait a minute, he's in jail!
And the next page tells you that. Actually, no, there's a fight scene. But then of course you sort of think, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. You turn the page and you see Matt sitting in his cell. I really like Michael Lark's art, probably when he was first on Gotham Central, and then he left. The other guy filled in. The other guy was pretty good, and I was like, oh, this is fine. And I don't think I realized how good it was until I'm seeing it again, because this art is just outstanding.
He's a great draftsman.
I mean, really, it's got sort of a photographic quality while at the same time having a highly stylistic sort of... It's got a lot of lines in it rather than shading.
Right.
Really, just very nice. His anatomy on like the Daredevil as it jumps through the air is just such a dynamic pose, and it looks real. And he's not overly muscly, and you can see like...
That's a great two-page spread.
It looks like fabric. It doesn't look like just red skin, you know what I'm
right.
saying?
Right. Looks like he's wearing something.
Yeah, but it's still, you know, form-fitting and all that. It's just, I mean, what a great shot. And you know, in the foreground is this giant head on the right side, and that should be taking up most of your attention, but it's all in black, and it's just the red image against the non-color of the rest of it.
But not only the art there, but the whole color scheme with the rain and the dark and the shadows, but everything's still clear. Just a great job all around. This is a really strong art team.
Yeah,
It's perfect
incredibly strong.
for Daredevil. Frank D'Armata is the colorist, and it's just a really good work right
And
there.
I think that you're getting a higher my middle page has a staple problem.
Oh no.
It's
You
okay.
just lost 25 cents off of your value.
There's no
How will
value.
your future kids go to college?
I know it's not going to be on my comic books. I think that the page quality in this is actually better than it was in Gotham Central, so it's a little less muddied. You know
Right.
what I'm saying? Like the paper
Sure.
quality and everything comes through a little better, and that actually makes a big difference.
Absolutely.
But that's what you get with a big tier book. Funny
One
though,
people
because
actually buy.
it's funny because they cancel Gotham Central, which is really excellent. Had this exact same team. You put them on Daredevil, and this will be the biggest book ever. You know what I mean? Like
That's
that.
comics for you.
It's sad, and not that it's not a. It's a really good book. It is, and that's part of the thing that we're talking about. It shows Matt's in prison. Matt's got all sorts of problems.
Who else is in
Matt's in
prison?
prison. He's in prison. He's. You don't have to quiz me. You can just say it.
I just want to make sure you read the book, Kingpin.
I did. Kingpin's in there, and Hammerhead, basically the thing going on is that the FBI guy who's captured Matt and put the charges up against him wants to transfer him to Gen Pop. And if you've ever watched prison dramas such as Oz, you would know that means general population.
And you know that's not good.
I'm not comparing this to Oz, by the way. I refuse to do that. It's too easy.
Although one might say that you could compare Daredevil to Beecher and Kingpin to Schillinger.
Okay, I'm not
I'm
doing
just
it.
throwing it out there.
See, every time you read anything about prison now, they're immediately like, it's like Oz mixed with blah, blah, blah. And I'm not doing that, stupid. And where's the sixth season on DVD? God damn it. So Matt's in there, and they're trying to get him transferred to Gen Pop, but he's blind legally, so they're not actually allowed to do that. But they figure if they flush him out into the open and where people will attack him,
and he'll have to defend himself and prove he's Daredevil, and then.
Right. And then they've got him dead to rights, or just dead.
Which
I think seems to be the thing they actually want.
This is a good learning experience, though, for me. If I'm ever being sent to federal prison, I'll just gouge my eyes out.
That's Kilpatrick. He runs at the first sign of trouble.
I think I would rather be blind in protective custody than able to see in the general population, because let's face it, I'm not lasting very long in the general population.
You're a big guy.
Yeah, but like you
Soft
said,
and
my
hard.
First instinct is to run. And there's nowhere to run in prison.
No, there isn't.
But
there's three walls and a mean man at the other side.
But what Josh is saying is there's multiple storylines. There's who is this mysterious person dressed as Daredevil fighting crime in Hell's Kitchen? Kingpin is trying to set up Daredevil to be killed in prison. Hammerhead's trying to hurt Daredevil in prison. The FBI is trying to hurt Daredevil in prison. And this is all being interweaved, and it's all very dense.
And there's a whole other story about Foggy, Murdoch's partner, best friend, lawyer. And he's come. Ben Urich from the paper is the only guy who's known who Daredevil was all along, or one of the only guys, is coming to talk to him about the idea that he's going into court to defend Daredevil, or to defend Murdoch against being Daredevil, but really he'd be lying because he is Daredevil. And how does he square that?
It's a moral issue.
And you know what? It's funny because all of this stuff is in there. And it doesn't feel like it was rushed.
No, not at all.
It doesn't feel like – it feels like it's a little long. I don't know. I don't mean that in a bad way, but like how they fit it all in there. But it's a single issue. It's an amazing bit of craft. I honestly
– Sometimes you read comics and you're like – you know, you fly through it in 2 minutes and it's over. This one took a while. You had to absorb it all. There's a lot going on, a lot of reading, a lot of you know, those 12-panel pages. And it's not – it's almost the exact opposite of the – Warren Ellis widescreen comics like Planetary that are over it, and you know,
is that over
90? No, but when you read those, you're done in 90 seconds.
Yeah,
this is a long one. This is a meal. This one, this feels like you've earned your $3 worth.
You know, here's something. I think that this style of comic book really lends itself to where single issues should be going right now, whereas the other style seems more like where trades.
Oh, totally. If you're working in the widescreen. "Quote unquote widescreen style of Warren Ellis with the three panels a page and
Grant Morrison invented.
Well, what do they call it? With the D word. It's not important. That was 19. That was 2000. That lends itself to trades because otherwise you feel ripped off if it's a single issue. It's a slower unfolding story.
Similarly, Gotham Central, they read great as single issues.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
The only problem with Gotham Central I had in single issues was that there was usually a lot of details and a lot of faces, and sometimes it was hard to keep them straight in your mind from month to month.
No, that's true. Because the characters, you know, you've got a lot of just
a lot going
30-ish
on, but...
brunette guys in the police force, and they look the same.
Oh, white guys. So it was really good. I could gush on and on about it, but I think that pretty much covers it.
I know. We were talking way back at Thanksgiving about the, when we had a Daredevil podcast and how terrified we were about the person coming on after Bendis and how they were screwed and how there was no way they were going to recover. And he did quite a nice job.
I think so.
So
it's pretty impressive.
If this issue is any indication, we're going to have a good year of Daredevil following.
Is that how long he's on it? Do we know?
Oh, I don't know, but I just figure he goes on for. I was just worried when it ended, when Bendis ended it, Daredevil would fall back through the cracks. But I figure this is going to keep it going. Quality
wise, Daredevil's been pretty good for at least a half a decade.
Oh, sure.
I mean, that's impressive. From the time that Kevin Smith started writing it,
mm-hmm.
right up through now, it was a little bit from what's his name.
Mac.
Kabuki. David Mack. That was not the same tone as this, but it was really good still.
Oh, absolutely.
Created Echo was a great character. I mean, this is a run.
Right.
I mean, they're high up on the ridge right now, and I
think it's interesting that Daredevil attracts the talent. It's sort of like the Marvel version of Batman.
Well, I think that you can give that all to Frank Miller.
Sure. Well, Frank Miller did it for both characters.
Interesting. He's not doing it now.
No, but I mean, it seems to be the character that these guys want to write.
So, did you read anything else? What do you got? What else do you got for me?
Well, I read Loveless first, and I thought for sure you would stick your thumb in everybody's eye and pick that and have two cowboy books in a row.
I'm sick of picking books no one wants to talk about or reads.
I just thought it'd be funny if we had two pick of the weeks in a row that were cowboy books that nobody reads but you and I.
Well, we're doing God's work.
And then we could just go totally inside and nobody will care what we say.
Let's just talk about this for 20 minutes or so. No one's going to hear it.
So Loveless is the other big cowboy western book out there, and Josh and I have discussed it in the past.
Written by Brian Obfuscation Azzarello.
Right. And some excellent art by Marcelo Frusen.
Yeah, good color schemes, too.
But in the past, we were saying other podcasts how we didn't know what was really going on in this book, A, and B, how long it was running for, because mentally you sort of read miniseries and open series differently. You expect more to happen in a miniseries, more development. Whereas if it's an ongoing series, you can put up with a certain amount of confusion, thinking that it'll all make sense eventually.
Unless you're reading the filth.
Right. Well, I think we'll talk about that in a minute. But this book, at the end, it's revealed that next issue is the conclusion. So apparently this is a 5-issue miniseries, which leads me to ask, as of issue 4, I still don't know what's going on.
I have a better idea than I did.
Okay.
Well, I mean, basically, I'm pretty sure that the wife that he's been talking to the whole time are all flashbacks. I think.
But in the beginning, she was killing people, wasn't she? I mean, didn't somebody, in the first issue, he ride up to town with somebody else on a horse?
And maybe that happened in the past.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. See, but if you look at the cover, colors all in color. The cover is all in color except for her.
Right,
she's
that's
in black and white. Now they don't say she's dead because he keeps asking where she is and when she left.
Right.
Basically, what it is, you've got this guy who is in Missouri or something like that.
I think so.
It's just after the Civil War, and Missouri would be right in the middle of the North and the South, and so they align themselves in this town with the South, the war is over, and now the U.S., the Union has declared martial law and taken over everybody's property who fought against them. And he's come back to get his house, and he finds out that the Union is occupying his house, and it's no longer his, according to them. So they offer him a deal that he can come work for them because he's got nowhere else to go. At the same time, all of his old friends and people that he fought with against the Union are running this sort of guerrilla-style insurgency. And he's sort of striding a line between all of them. And we don't know which way he's going to go.
But there's also this weird subplot with an escaped slave, which is basically just he's just been running for 4 issues. And he gets chased by the Klan here, and I don't understand what that has to do with anything either.
I assume it will. Well, again, we just have to assume it will come together.
I hope so.
It's Azzarello. It's a tone piece. I don't really expect it to. Having read a lot of his stuff, and being completely done with 100 Bullets, by the way.
Well, you pledged last week to drop it.
I'm not buying the next one.
Okay,
I'm out.
Good.
I don't expect a lot of answers, is my guess. And you want to go for the tone. He does character. He tries to create the. A lot of his characters are the same sort of aimless.
Well, I've read some Azzarello, not as much as you have. I read the first trade of 100 Bullets, which is really good.
First 20 issues or so were excellent.
I read the story he did for Hellblazer, the hard time story, where Hellblazer's in prison.
It's not like Oz, though.
No.
Actually, it was almost a ripoff of Oz.
That was good, and I read his year-long Superman story, which made absolutely no sense
whatsoever.
You
read it for a whole year?
Yes.
I read the first issue, and I went, no.
It made no sense whatsoever, and I feel like I probably read a thing or two here and there, maybe a short story or a single issue, but overall, I don't get it.
Did you read his Hulk? Didn't he do a Hulk for a while?
Luke Cage I did not read.
Which they retconned, basically.
Yeah.
Because they had him as super-duper thug.
I didn't read any of that.
Yeah. It was nice. Who's that artist was that? He was like a horror artist, and it's got that little dot stipply style.
Was it Corbin?
Yep. Nice work.
Thank you.
Pulling that out of the vault.
I know. He's good.
So anyway, Loveless, that's that.
New Avengers was good also.
I'm on issue, sort of. I missed the part between issue 14 and the end of the first trade, but it doesn't seem like much has happened since then, so. Except, I don't know who the guy on the cover is.
I've been thinking about that, even though that guy on the cover doesn't appear in this book, or he wasn't in the lineup announcement in the last issue, unless I'm mistaken.
I don't know, he wasn't, I don't think.
I believe, not being the Marvel historian that Ron is, and too bad he's not here to clean this up, but this was a made-up character, one of those, who is this, for a whole storyline, one of the ones you missed where they fought Silver Samurai and all these Japanese ninjas, and it was one of those, who is this guy character that was made up, and it's it was hinted that it was somebody recognizable under the costume, and if they intentionally led us to believe it might be Daredevil, especially because Bendis was writing it, and I believe at the end it turned out that it was revealed to be Echo.
Echo?
I think it was.
The girl?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, I think that's who it is.
She doesn't look like a girl.
Well, that's the wonders of...
Maybe Echo
unstable molecules.
Maybe Echo is the fake Daredevil.
Ooh, that's a good point.
I hadn't thought of that. Before, I thought it might be Black Widow because of that other cover where they have her suiting up in the Daredevil thing.
Right. I mean, it obviously appears to be a man, but this is comics. They can get past that. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that is Echo on the cover, masquerading as this other person. But I could
be wrong. It's not only a man, though. It's a giant man.
Right.
Anyway.
Anyway, this was good stuff, and Canadian Super Team Alpha Flight, I think they're dead. Josh doesn't think they're dead.
I don't think they killed them. They just sort of wasted them. And, they'll go and I don't know. They look kind of dead.
Basically, this space creature, human, who looks kind of like a human torch, comes down to Earth and starts marching across Canada towards the U.S., lands in Alaska, marches across Canada, and along the way wipes out a SHIELD battalion, and Alpha Flight shows up very posed and says, "We're Alpha Flight, stop what you're doing." And
if they are dead, I find it interesting that they made a bigger deal out of North Star being gay than him being killed.
Right. Well, if they are dead, there's been not a peep of it on the internet. I mean, you figure that would have caused a ruckus, but
from the huge legions the huge legions of Alpha Flight plans. They're Alpha Flight. I can't say it. Alpha Flight fans. That's hard. Alpha Flight fans who really don't want him to be gay. But really, could if he lives or die, that's no
better
big
dead
deal.
Than gay. Is really,
I guess so.
The message here, but so they're actually. I don't think the New Avengers, except for Tony Stark, aren't even in this issue. But
yeah, you're right. Actually, it's all this Shield agent. This Tony artist. Stark. This artist, by the way, is like a, I don't know, like a J.G. Williams light sort of.
Right.
Very nice. I really
it
like
is it. Good. It's very good. I hated the original artist Finch. I just don't like his style.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's
I don't
like
hate
that
him personally.
Top Cow style.
I'm sure he's a nice guy and all, but. Yeah, I don't like that overly rendered, very sketchy 90s late 90s Image Top Cast style. I just don't never. It's never appealed to me. I like Frank Cho.
Oh, Cho. He draws a sexy lady.
That he does.
Some might say it's a little overwrought, but.
But he's it would be overwrought if he wasn't good overall all around.
Yeah, I mean you could arguably say that he draws his men just as overly silly as his women.
Sure.
Granted, you might need giant muscles to fight crime, but you don't necessarily need giant breasts.
That's true, but they don't hurt.
Well, they could over time. They lead to back problems, swelling.
Getting in the way.
Getting in the way. You're always knocking things over.
Although the excuse for some of the more ridiculous character costumes in the past, like the Phantom Lady in the DC Universe, who basically wears two straps across her boobs, is that they're distracting. The whole explanation is they distract the criminals into lulling them to, you know, boobies, and they get punched. And you know.
You know what? I guess that's something. But there's actually a panel in here. Remember when Ron said something before about him thinking that Bendis writes Wolverine a little too stereotypical?
Yes.
You know what? I think I understand what he means now.
Okay.
You know, it's funny. Bendis is really good with everybody, but on Wolverine, he's a little too caricature-y of himself. And
Are you looking at a different issue because he's not in issue 16?
No. I'm sorry. I'm looking at 15 because we were talking about.
Well,
Frank
we can
Cho.
Still talk about it. What is he doing?
He's drinking milk and he's burping like out of the canister. And
well, that's what Ron exactly said.
I'm not going out on stage and playing Dancing Monkey. I see what he's saying, because since then I've known him to be a little more like silent and stoic. Like if you read Greg Rucka's run on it on Wolverine.
Right. Well, the thing about team books are always like that. I mean, characters in team books tend to be more of their stereotypical archetype characters than they are in their regular books, where there's more nuance. For instance, I'll take it back to DC because that's what I know best. In the Justice League books, Batman tends to be more of the stereotypical Batman than he is in his own book. It's just simply because they don't get as much time.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's almost better for them to say nothing sometimes.
True.
And like there's another scene near the end of it with Jessica Drew, by the way, who's very pregnant, which I guess she had her baby just after this.
Jessica Drew is Spider-Woman, isn't it?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm getting it mixed up. Who is it? It's Jessica something.
Jessica Jones.
Anyway, she's like way pregnant, but her breasts are ridiculously huge. And then Wolverine is burping. It's a little too much, but
well, this new artist McNiven, he's a nice medium between Cho and Finch. Mm-hmm. I think
I like Cho though. I'd love to see more of his work in this stuff.
So would I.
I definitely would. And I bet he makes more doing that than his indie books. Which are good. I've read Liberty Meadows a little bit. They're pretty funny. They're cutesy. They're weird. They're like, he's got all these little cute animal creatures, and then, like, the most ridiculously overwrought female character ever. I can't remember her name at the moment, but...
What is it about? Like,
it is about an animal sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a strip. It's a comic strip.
It's not a book.
No, but there's slight... Like, they'll do, like... You know how Calvin and Hobbes would do a week on something?
Right.
They do it like that, and then
where's it
like,
published?
Image publishes it now, but he was self-publishing it for a while, I think.
Interesting.
I don't think it was. I think it might be actually a little too risque to publish in papers, but it might have been.
Probably.
I don't really know. But it's not. It's just like she just is overly voluptuous, sort of.
Right. I've seen pictures from it. I just never know what this premise was.
It's cute. You know. It's what it is. But, you know, he's obviously capable of really good work. Remember it was like he was supposed to do a Shanna the She-Devil series? I don't think that ever
came out.
He did
do it.
He did?
Yes. I bought the first issue because it got a lot of hype. Uh-huh. And I stopped buying on philosophical grounds because Marvel censored a lot of it.
Oh.
Like they at first were touting it as being risque and more adult, mm-hmm. i.e. like nakedness and things. But... when it eventually came out, they had added, you know, clothing where there wasn't before and changed panels around so you couldn't... It was just... I mean, not that I care about that, but I care about it on a philosophical level. As if you're gonna commission art and then didn't tout it as one thing and then you get scared and you censor
Marvel,
it, then
Marvel
I
is,
stop buying that.
Marvel's hedging their bets a lot because right. I think they know that a lot of their customer base is can be very conservative, and so they they skirt the line, and they'll do things every once in a while which seem like they're gonna like they're progressive. But and I'm not even downing them for this because it's smart business for them, I think.
Sure.
Because they could very easily alienate a lot of their customer base, and I think if we've seen nothing else, the right can stick together. You know what I did read?
What?
I read X Factor 3, which I didn't manage to pick up last week, so I'm gonna once again be the guy who a couple
comes
weeks
late
after,
to the party.
Yeah, come late to the party. It was great though,
wasn't it?
I enjoyed it. From the first opening scene where Siren, I guess, has – I can't tell if she's dreaming or masturbating or something, but that's pretty risque.
Sure. And she's
talking about having sex with Ewan McGregor and Obi-Wan – or he is Obi-Wan and Liam Neeson, which I was like, that's unexpected. to Layla Miller, who knows things, going indeed, as you said, quite dark.
Right. So I think just Peter David's really locked into this these group of characters. He always has been, and he writes. You know, he can be very jokey and kind of overly hammy for sometimes. But when he's really identifies with the character, like he did with the Hulk, and X Factor and Aquaman, he can really do good work.
Do you know why? I think that there were parts of this book that felt a lot like Strangers in Paradise.
Really.
I mean, I know you haven't read a lot of it, but the bits with the girl like singing, as people like walking on her naked, and, you know, the guy that feels a lot like Strangers in Paradise. That opening scene when they're and when you know she's fantasizing about something or other, and they're talking about sex, and like it just that wow. I mean, and I can see why Ron really likes this book because I'm sensing a lot of that. And the action scenes are actually the parts that I tend to pay the least attention to, but they're important because they build up that tone. What's with Strong Guy's hair? I don't want that.
Strong Guy is in dire need of a makeover.
He really is.
He needs a redesign, bad, pronto.
Ugh.
But yeah. Other than that, it's good. That's a really excellent superhero book too, and it's got some good superhero stuff out these days.
Yeah, but
it's unusual
I mean,
for you.
You know what? Like I said, when he got me to, I've really been wanting to read good comics lately. It's just really been hard to find them, and I think for a while I gave up. I'm not trying anymore because I was smacking the face too often by love, you see.
I think that next month when DC reboots a lot of that stuff, you might find some good stuff.
I hope so. I think what will happen is when Marvel rebooted, I mean, how many reboots have we seen since then? But
true.
When they did it for the first time in 97, 90, 97 or so, 96.
Right.
And they had all those number ones, and they had, you know, Mark Waid and Kirby Siak, and they were writing a lot of books, and there was, like, a great Captain America and a great Avengers and a great great Iron Man. Like, it was all sorts of really good books.
Right.
And then they all sort of faded over time because they couldn't keep it up. But, you know, when it felt like it feels like it, at times if the companies want to, they can concentrate.
Sure. You know fewer books, you can get better work out of it.
Yeah, and when they do that, you get great comics. And then when they don't concentrate and they're just putting out stuff,
Well, ride it out while you can, I guess.
I guess. Yeah, enjoy the good times while you can.
So on iFanboy.com this week, we've had some interesting discussions, one of which was a discussion on the relative merits of Grant Morrison as a writer. Some people don't like him. Some people love him. Some people love him sometimes and don't like him others. Josh, your thoughts?
Okay, I'll start because I'm the yapper. I think that Grant Morrison's great strength is that I'm going to go ahead and do it. I'm going to do a baseball metaphor.
He you does. Hate those.
Oh God, I do. He swings for the fences every time.
Right.
I mean, like there, I've never seen a book from him that I was like, he's so phoning this in. And I think that all of the greats have phoned it in. I think. I don't want to say it. I think Warren Ellis, I'm not really calling him a great, but I think you can easily see when he phones it in.
Sure.
I've seen Garth Ennis phone it in.
Absolutely.
I've seen Mark Miller phone it in. I don't know if I've seen – maybe I have seen Bendis phone it in here or there. But Grant Morrison never does. And the problem with that is when you swing that hard, you're bound to miss some.
Sure.
And I think that he's got an amazing imagination. He gets very excited about an idea, and he'll go with it. And he doesn't always know how to conclude that idea.
Or sometimes it's just too much in his head.
Perhaps.
You know, I just can't get it on the page.
Or maybe, you know, sometimes a great idea doesn't have a great solution.
True.
And I think that happens a lot, where, you know, he's like this great concept, this amazing thought, and no real way to end it. And I've seen him end things really quickly. I think that's – I've called that Grant Morrison syndrome, like when a book just is going great and then all of a sudden it's over.
I also think that perhaps that's Seth's style, the big idea, crazy, out there ideas, it might be too much for some people.
Maybe.
Some people's tastes probably run towards more traditional style storytelling. Mm-hmm. And he's definitely not traditional in his storytelling style.
I like him in there as a different sort of flavor. He is the hot sauce to the to the simple food. Like,
look, he's had some great stuff. I think the three of us agree, not everyone does, but the three of us agree that his Justice League run ranks up there as one of the best.
I've yet
Justice
to see
League, superhero
Justice League
runs, just in general, comic book runs. Mm-hmm. Filth would be the other side of the coin. His Filth miniseries was just not good.
I bought every one of them.
I respect you for that.
I don't know why.
I don't know why I do either, but you stuck with it and it just never came around. I gave it three or four issues before I finally just couldn't take it anymore. And I really liked the first issue. It was
Chris
really...
Weston art. That guy's great.
It is. He is great.
He did Ministry of Space. By the way, there's another Warren Ellis book that I really liked.
That was a good book, too.
Although it was like a year between issues.
That's also a problem. But Filth, not so good. His Seven Soldiers, which is this very ambitious project he's got going, it's a series of four-issue miniseries. There's probably 8 to 10 of them. And there's also a cohesive miniseries just called Seven Soldiers that's about 7 issues long. And it's going to end up being like 50 or 60 books in total.
That's really good.
Some of it is really good. Some of it is not really good. It's the Grant Morrison formula. Some of his ideas work, and he really gets them. And some of them, you know, nice try, but that one didn't hold together so well.
God love him for trying, though.
Sure. I mean, it's something different, and when it works, it's really great. I got handed his Wii 3, little short graphic novel I did with Frank Quitely last week. Somebody at work, her boyfriend had gotten it from somebody, and he wasn't interested in it, so she gave it to me, and. It's really good. It's about this government plan to develop, you know, more and better soldiers with exoskeletons. And this time they decide instead of using people, they'll use household pets. Mm-hmm. So there's like a dog and a cat and a rabbit, and they put them in these exoskeletons. And of course, what happens? They get smart and they escape and blow things up. And it's good. This is one of those big Grant Morrison ideas that actually worked and it was fun and entertaining. And
it's funny because that came out, I think, right after, I don't know, I think after the Filth, I was like, no, I'm not taking this. So I let it lay for a little while, and then Sea Guy came out. And I thought, it's a Vertigo series, I'll give it a try, Sea Guy. It was awful. It was so, I think it was worse than the Filth, because it wasn't even interesting. It was just crazy. And I think Wii 3 came out right about the same time, or right after that. And I was like, never again, buddy. Never. You're not abusing me anymore. And so I didn't.
I've learned my lesson. Oh.
Yeah, so you can't tell with him.
Well, that's the danger.
You know, it was great, and I don't know how many people remember it or how many people bought it, but his Marvel Boy series when Marvel Knights first came out.
I heard that was good. I didn't actually buy that either.
J.G. Williams or J.G. Jones art. I think it was 4 or 5 issues, and in the end, the enemy ended up being this giant living corporation organism. Thing.
That's cool.
It was like this big cube abstract thing, and it was sentient. It was the strangest thing, and it was all these other things around it that made it interesting, and all these ideas of what a giant corporation would do to people who had its own organism and sentient thoughts. And it was just like it was the good side of him. It was what he does best. And
well, for instance, some of the Seven Soldiers stories that worked. One of the characters is the Guardian, who is he's like a low level. Vigilante character in Metropolis, which, you know, you don't have a lot of business when you're a low-level vigilante in Metropolis. There's not a lot to do with Superman there. But so he takes him here and he uses him as the face of a newspaper. This newspaper hires him to be their, you know, their personal superhero who goes out and when he fights crime, he's also promoting the newspaper, and because the Guardian is a very newspaper-sounding name.
It's not very journalistically objective, is it?
No, but you know, have you read a newspaper lately?
No.
There you go. There's a lot of just objective journalism left. But one of the things he ends up fighting against is in the Metropolis subways are these pirates who they've got their own subway car and they go flying around the system and they show up in a platform and they jump off like they're you know, raiding a ship or a little village, and they've got patches and swords and peg legs, and they talk like "arr," and they, it was just a wacky, funny idea that worked really well because they were kind of scary. And I ride the subway every day, and I thought, you know, what would I do if a subway car full of pirates showed up? I'd be terrified. You know, that's a pretty scary notion. So that was something that worked. And his, I like his crime-fighting Frankenstein monster, which I think is a really, really funny idea. With the, he's got a big sword and a gun, and he's actually Frankenstein's monster. But anyway, I just, you know, he's great, great, great ideas, and when they work, they're excellent. When they don't work, it's just awful, awful comics. But, you know, he doesn't. Some people just don't like him. He rubs them the wrong way.
I guess.
I think his X-Men run would fall into both camps. I think some things really, really worked, and some things didn't.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it all. I don't think it paid off the way.
Yeah, I think ultimately it was slightly unsatisfying. Although the beginning was really good. Mm-hmm. And I really liked his idea that not every mutant power would be something that you could use to fight crime.
Right.
You know, because that's something that really hasn't been explored a lot. Is that some people might just have big heads.
And it should.
You know, or funky eyes. You know, not everybody can shoot laser beams out of their hands or girl claws. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he had some wacky ideas for mutants too. I mean, like it was like the chicken guy. Chicken guy's not doing anything for anybody. And there was Jesus, was Zorn? Zorn wasn't his. Zorn ended up being Magneto, didn't it?
Zorn was Magneto, yes.
But I mean, the mutant power I thought was interesting. He was a
sure. So there you go. I mean, he's. That's him in a nutshell. Big ideas that sometimes they pay off. And I know, you know, Josh used the metaphor, and he doesn't like the baseball metaphor because he's a communist. But he is very apt. Grant Morrison is a baseball slugger who doesn't do anything but hit. And he goes up there, and he's, every time he comes up, he swings for the fences, and he either hits the ball 450 feet or he strikes out. When he hits the ball 450 feet, it's a beautiful thing. When he strikes out, it's really ugly.
Yeah. And you know, take that as you will. But and sometimes it's possible you just don't like his voice.
It's true. You know, some people just don't
like. It is a unique voice, if nothing else.
There's nothing wrong with it. It's just some people's tastes are varied. That's the great thing about comics. There's so many of them. You can find what you like.
So let's see. I believe we are a little short on the viewer mail this week, but we did get one.
One really good one.
I'm going to read it because I can't really do it justice otherwise.
Go ahead.
We were talking about ads in comic books last week and really bad ads and their inability to figure it out. This one, let's see. I just finished listening to your discussion on ads in comics and some of the ads that disturb you. I would have to say the most disturbing ad in comics today is for Zit Cream and has BMXer Dave Mira in it. Now, the fact that they're selling Zit Cream is not disturbing to me, nor is Mr. Mira, because let's face it, he's hot. The disturbing part is the tweaked-out girl with the dreads in the background. She looks like she needs a place to lay down for a while and let whatever she has wear off, or whatever she's on wear off. Plus, she looks kind of dirty, and she needs to hit that thang with a rag every once in a while. I don't know what that means. Now, I'm a gay guy. I can definitely appreciate the female form in all its splendor, but I don't see how Sally Methhead selling Zit Cream is appealing to 14-year-old boys. Of course, I also think that Paris Hilton has a sloppy snooter. I don't know what that means. Am I in the minority here? And then he thanks us, since this podcast's good, and we love that. But that's creative writing at its finest right there, people.
I don't know what that means.
I don't either, but I've seen the ad, and he's right.
I haven't seen the ad.
It's a horrible ad. It's just one of those things where, like, well, we got to put something in the comic book.
It's one of those ads where the ad agency says, let's go edgy, so we'll put a girl who looks like she's on heroin in it.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's kind of it.
Nice.
It's a bad ad. But that's from Alessio in Florida.
I would find that a lot of comic book ads are just bad overall.
Yeah, they just don't know what to do. I mean, a lot of print ads are bad if you read magazines.
Sure.
So it's not – it's just the art of it is gone. On the back of this comic book I'm looking at, this is the New Avengers. There is – it's like a claymation ad for bubble tape. Yeah, this isn't getting anyone to buy this. They just don't know who they're talking to right now, I think is what
no,
it is.
No, they can't decide if it's kids or
– anyway, we already did that.
Yeah, we don't drive that into the ground again.
We could, though. So, Alessio, he went and put his pin in the Frapper map, and along with a bunch of – we're so nearly at 60. In fact, by the time you listen to this, we could be over 60, or it might
possibly
be
possibly 80?
Yeah, because we don't know when you'll listen to this.
We've had some good fellow Brooklynite Bill who put the pin in the map. The digital arcanist who is from Ocampo, California, he put a pin in the map – Alessio from Florida, Patrick from Spokane, Washington, who...
That's... Come on.
He looks just like the Patrick who put a pin in the map from Atlanta, so I'm not sure what's going on here.
And the Atlanta pin's gone.
Is it?
Isn't
no,
it?
It's not. It's here.
Oh, no, it's not. I'm sorry. I think I don't know where Atlanta is.
It's in the north part of Georgia.
See, I thought it was in the south.
Yeah, you're wrong. And Tom Denick in Santa Monica, California, who's actually a independent film, comic book maker on his own right. Jerome T.M. Bang in Duncanville, Texas. We've got quite a few pins in Texas. Cameron in La Crescenta, California, who's also posts on the website. Thank you, Cameron. Luke in Atchison, Kansas. Doug in St. Paul, Minnesota, who actually spurred on this Grant Morrison conversation. He's had some good stuff lately.
That's true. We got a lot of Kansas going on, a little Missouri going on. Texas, which I think we have a lot of support in Texas, but I think it's just a big state.
True.
I think there's four pins or something in there. Arizona, doing well. Anyway.
But we still need, some of the other countries. We got
South America.
South America.
Buenos Dias, South America.
We got somebody send us listener mail from there. We think you'd put a pin in the map. Make us happy. Because there's not a lot of joy in our lives.
We got Australia. We really just need Africa.
We would like somebody from the homeland of Ireland to put a pin in the map.
Oh, word. I hadn't even thought of that. We got Scotland and England.
We got Josh Flanagan and Connor Kilpatrick. Put somebody
in. You know what? We have Scotland, England, and Wales.
And no Ireland.
No Ireland or Northern Ireland. I would take either.
Africa, hello.
Yeah. I would like to get something from Kazakhstan.
Kazakhstan.
That would
or
be a good
time.
Can they
Turkey.
Get comics there?
I'm sure.
I read Claremont Run on X-Men now. It's very good.
Hey, we'll take it,
I would, and those are good comics.
But if you like putting a pen in the map, you're listening, www.frapper.com/ifanboy, Frapper spelled F-R-A-P-P-R, or you can go to ifanboy.com, look in the upper right-hand corner, there's a little link for the Frapper map. You can click on that and get to the map and say hello. Come to ifanboy.com and talk.
Talk about, if you want to respond to anything we say, you can do it on there. And we're watching, we're listening, we'll talk with you. There's not so many people now that we can't pay attention. So, but there's always enough people that there's something to talk about. And that's been something that's really fun, been going on lately.
Lots of a lot of good discussion lately. Mm-hmm. And if you want to talk about pornography, Toga's always up for that.
You can't let that go.
No. Also, if you want to send us an email, say hi. We love good email. We love email telling us we're bad. We'd like to improve. We'd like to, no one
if
says
you have
perfect.
A story you want us to post on the site, send that along.
contact@ifanboy.com is the way to go. We'd love to hear from you.
So this has been the Great Lost episode of the iFanboy podcast.
Hopefully you'll hear it.
Yeah. Maybe not. We're not very important.
The world will keep spinning. Slightly slower, but it'll spin. But that's probably more physics related than it is the podcast.
I never bought that Superman spinning the world backwards thing.
I think that would probably just kill us.
That's exactly what would happen. We would all die. Which would, I think, be antithetical to his purpose.
Yeah. I mean, he was supposed to be smart, right?
Yeah.
Stupid Superman.